We always say that America should listen to its students, but when it comes to Black students, we're just not quite ready to hear their voice. We're going to talk about it tonight on the 8 Black Hands. What? Every time we play that every week, I feel like it should be a party. Welcome, friends and family. This is another episode of the 8 Black Hands. It happens to be episode 199, and we're going to have a special treat for you on episode 200, which will be coming up soon. But that's not tonight. Tonight, we are going to talk about Black genius. We're going to talk about our young people and whether or not America is ready to listen to its young, specifically its Black young. Now, I think if you have been around with us long enough, you know what our answer to that is going to be. When I ask a question like, is America ready for Black people? Y'all know what we're going to say about that part. So let's not act like that's going to be a mystery. Like, I wonder if, you know. But let's do say this. Let's say specific to young people. And whether or not they're being listened to. I just want to give like an example, and I'll pull it up on the screen later, but I posted something not that long ago about a young child, Black child in Minnesota who had the courage to speak before our Senate, a Senate education community, committee, I'm sorry. And she was actually testifying to say that she went to a school that had more Black teachers, and suddenly she felt more affirmed than she had ever felt in Minnesota previous to that. And she was saying, just basically, really sweet, 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 just like testimony, please pass this bill that would give us more teachers of color. In Minnesota, we have 94% white teachers, 94%. Actually, I'm sorry, take that back, 96%, 4% teachers of color. And when I say teachers of color, that's not even Black teachers, right? So
it's everybody.
So we have 4% teachers of color. There's a bill here to put some money and put our back into getting a more diverse workforce. And that's why she was there. So I posted it with the title Genius, because it is public speaking is so hard, y'all. So when you're a young person who goes before the Senate committee and you're a fourth grader, that's what it was, fourth grader. And you go before this committee to testify and you are poised and sweet and get all your words out. We should applaud that. So I'll put that on my Twitter.
You're not going to call her articulate? What's up with
articulate, that? Clean and articulate. Isn't that what Biden says about Black people? Yeah, you know, Obama's really clean and articulate. He's got soap and a dictionary. anyways, this young genius, I posted it on my Twitter because I like to post some sweet things, some salty things, and some meat on my stuff. It's not one thing. And then every now and then I throw in some Jesus stuff, right? Just to clean out my timeline, right? So I posted this, and it was just basically saying public speaking is really hard, and this young person brought it, and we need to find more ways to support our young people like this. And hashtag free to learn. And that thing went off the hook. 62, almost 63,000 views. And that's pretty good when you're talking about a story that's just like, you know, a news report, news story. Most of it was positive, but then a whole bunch of people came in the tweet saying, oh, so now we just gonna hire teachers by the race, their color.
Wait, real quick.
Yeah.
Say a whole bunch of people, right? Let's clarify. A whole bunch of people like who? A whole bunch, because like, because
this a whole bunch of people from your political party,
okay,
who are not necessarily your same melanin content. Okay.
All right. Yeah, it's important that we name that, right? Because like, I don't know that many Black folks that are gonna be that are gonna show up as anti-Black when you have Black genes, right?
Well, so, I will say this much too: once you start getting that conservative thing on, some of our own people like to get in comments and say dumb things about, like, you know, we should just hire the best teachers. Why are we trying to, you know, increase diversity? Why would we ask, you know, the color of our skin and all that? So that makes for a
conversation as well, right? So Reeve, you hire, right? And the things that you do now are pretty focused on making sure and building up the capacity for Black teachers so that, you know, not only are we recruiting them, but we're also retaining them, right? Because like I think an important part of the work that you do is this whole retention piece, right? Because you can bring people into that burning house, but if you ain't got no fire extinguisher to put out the fire, and they ain't gonna burn up in there. So talk to us about, like, when you were a principal, and I can speak to it as well. When you were a principal, like, what kind of things you look for in terms of, like, your candidates of color, and, like, what gave them, like, the edge over anybody else? If you know, I know it's an HR nightmare, but let's talk about it though.
I mean, I think the number one thing is about being anti-racist, right? You know, content, deep content knowledge, and culture proficiency. You know, like, that's, you know, those are the two anchor. Then you want to see fit, you want to see organization, you want to see communication skills, you want to see problem solving, yeah. you know, all of that. But I think a part of, like, you know, these comments is, you know, all of the, you know, sometimes, like, schools and teaching, it's like almost talked about in this vacuum sometimes, you know, because I do think that people have this nostalgia about schools. I don't know if it's because people, you know, grew up in Leave It to Beaver and other type of shows that always just has this, you know, what is it? Waiting for the Bell. Just this.
Saved by the Bell.
You know, all this thing about school. But there's an assumption that as soon as you talk about diversification, people, because of their racial bias, automatically assume you're talking about a lower standard.
Yeah.
Because to them, quality means white. Even if they don't say it, their unconscious bias means that. They mean that about beauty. Yep. They mean that about, you know, what the classics are. They mean that about, you know, hair. They mean that about educators. You know, so there's always this default, like, well, here's the whiteness is the bar. So if you're talking about diversity, that means you're moving away from whiteness, which means you're moving away from purity, and which means you're moving away from goodness. Yes. And that assumption that people carry on with them, and unfortunately, some people who are Black also have that, this type of scripture that they are beholden to. And it's this automatic assumption that, oh, this is different. Oh, you're talking about lowering the quality of what we have in front of our children. Like, no, we got trash in front of our children, and we need to improve it significantly, rapidly, you know? So the assumption that the best qualified person has to be white is what they're, you know, that's their default, and that's what their mindset and orientation is, unfortunately.
Yeah. And so to piggyback off that, bro, and thanks for naming that, I think when we talk about, Chris, you good? when we talk about hiring the best candidate, right?
I actually think they should keep it that way. Keep it on me the entire time, and everybody just talks. Hey, it's
all good.
That would be funny.
I make you look good, baby. That's what I'm here for. When you go into the whole mindset of hiring the best candidate, right? It's not once removed to hire a white candidate that's the best candidate, but that white candidate is going to be culturally proficient. That white candidate is going to probably be of the community, and if they don't live in the community, then they're at least gonna understand or want to learn to understand what it means to be a teacher in that community for longevity, right? So, like, I'm not saying that, hey, you know, any hire that you have that's like a Black person against a white person, that the Black person is always going to win out. No, because that's just not always the case. But, you know, I'm rooting for everybody Black.
Well, you know, so this is something I've never seen. And maybe some of you all can disabuse me of this. But when we talk about student voice, I have rarely seen students be involved in the process of who gets to teach them.
They are.
You know, and I would love to see, maybe they are. Maybe you can give me some examples
where they probably aren't.
Yeah. I was about to say writ large, they aren't. Like,
okay,
you know, like, I mean, there's 3 million teachers in this country. I can guarantee you that parents and students weren't responsible for placing the majority of them into the classrooms where they're at. The placement process in some districts, just how you arrive at a classroom, is pretty convoluted in some places. We had serious churn of teachers in some of our worst performing schools in the Twin Cities, and we couldn't stop it and stem it. And I know the public and the community had no choice in that. Now, let me raise this. Let me give you a fairly revolutionary example, since we got Ish wearing his ex hat tonight. let me give you a fairly revolutionary example. The Zapatistas in the Chiapas schools in Northern Mexico, right? Like, is this example that I'm fascinated with, and I keep going back and reading things about it. But the one thing that stands out to me about their story is this is a group of indigenous, a part of Mexico that's mostly indigenous folks who overthrew their schools. They overthrew the government, they overthrew their schools, and they rebuilt them because they wanted their language, their heritage, their cultures to not die and dissipate. So in doing that, they had to answer questions like, how will we do school now? Like, you know, like for us bias type of thing. But the part that got to me was they elected teachers, right? They didn't hire teachers. They didn't choose teachers or whatnot. The community elected which teachers. They elected teachers, and then they took care of them, right? So to be a teacher was this role of honor. Number one, you came into it because the community wanted you there, including, you know, young people and their parents. And then they took care of you. That's so different than the way I think, like, our Black children are showing up to schools in the United States. When I tell you that, like it's not this way, I'm sure, in Philly, but 96% white teachers in a very rapidly increasingly diverse student body, that means you really are not having a lot of, like, I don't know how to put it, a lot of say in who should be teaching you and how, because we would never devise a system to be that way for ourselves.
Yeah, but not only that though, right? It's like they get so much on the defensive when you mention the word like diversified teaching, right? Because they you're coming for something that they feel like belongs to them,
mm-hmm, right? Their pension.
So, right, exactly. So when you talk about pensionistas and you talk about just the protection over that, then you see like these zealots coming out super hard and like, what the hell you mean you trying to bring Black teachers in, right? But meanwhile, when you look at the makeup of the Black teacher, when you look up the makeup of teachers union, I'm not coming at teachers unions today.
Because you can't do that.
Teachers unions for the past 6 months have been my friend. And so, I will say, yeah.
What's the matter with you?
Prior to that. Anyway, last 6 months. But think about what I'm saying here, right? When you see the picketing and when you see like the things happening in these cities and whatnot, shit, you would think that teaching was 100% Black in terms of how you see them put Black teachers in the forefront to then connect with the parents or connect with the parents of color to try to calm them down from them being hostile with the system.
Ish, I want to bring you in to ask you this. What's the plan for youth power? What's the plan in education to make youth a power?
I don't think that is any type of goal of anybody in education for real. And I do want to highlight the fact, even when we talk about this idea of diversity and affirmative action, which a lot of folks I noticed on your social media was referencing, right? Most of the beneficiaries of it have been white women.
If we keep say, it, whoa, 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 Ish, say it one more time. Say it one more time. Pronounce it. Use your words. Say what you just.
Most of the beneficiaries of affirmative action have been white women, who are the majority of the teacher force, right? And some of my closest friends are white women, so I ain't going, you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to say, though, that this narrative is rooted in anti-Blackness. And what our students, what our Black students experience and their voices being silenced is kind of a reflection of the overall society's orientation towards Black people as a whole, right? So if you expect, like, Black adults not to be respected or valued within our society, why do you think children's voices in schools would be respected? I'm in a unique position in the school district where I was even able 2 weeks ago to sit down with Black students and ask them what are they actually learning in their classes when it comes to history and Black history specifically, right? And it was very interesting what the students articulated, not to throw that out there, but kind of spoke about, right? And they spoke about kind of acknowledging like how most of it was the same thing over and over again, right? Slavery, Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, and of course, very whitewashed narratives, right? And I think that when we try to tell students what they should care about, what they should feel, we're already doing a disservice, but that's what America does to Black people. I mean, they market to us certain ideas and things that they associate with Blackness and be like, oh, isn't that what Black people want? you know, the Juneteenth ice cream that Walmart was selling.
Right? don't talk about that. You know, somebody got something from the day after. The stuff from Walmart. Target. That's Target. The day after Joe's sales.
Hey, March 1st, I'm heading to Target.
March 1st, ladies and gentlemen, go to Target, go to the Black History section, get your mugs, your journals, your shirts, and your bags for 75% off.
Somebody's just saying that the Black History Month section at Barnes & Noble, somebody went viral talking about they only had two books, Black people.
Not in mine, and I live in an area where you wouldn't be able to find as much, and ours is pretty well stocked.
Okay.
I'll say this about like the idea that there is no plan then to really get young people to the forefront of power. The student walkouts recently, the student walkouts in the past, the young people's version or their role in every rights movement is actually uncontested. It's slightly studied, and then we don't make much of it because we're old people. We're all ageist. We seem to forget it like right away. If it wasn't for like, you know, those young people walking out in Alabama recently of class because they were told that they had to take slavery out of their Black History Month program because it was making administrators uncomfortable. And they were like, to hell with your comfort.
We're so queasy. Come on, man.
Facts don't care about your feelings.
Those young people walked out.
There are several. Okay, y'all too old for TikTok, so I'm just gonna like translate for y'all since I'm like, you know, I'm down with young people.
We see you're like pretty prolific on it now. Yeah. So you've mastered it. I'm just like, look at Chris. He's 60 years old up on that TikTok joint.
I'm kind of a big deal on TikToks. I'm down with the TikToks. Anyways, that's not true for everybody, and nor is my age what he just said. By the way, just so that we are clear about this or whatnot. But there are young people on TikTok that are actually doing a better journalist job about their districts in some of these places. We read the headlines, like in Texas, Southlake, Texas, a principal gets fired because he posted a picture with his wife on his Facebook, and he went to a CRT conference or you know whatever. And the news report comes out, and then adults quickly kind of, there's no organizing. There's not a lot of stuff going on, except for the young people. Mm-hmm. The young people are how I find out that some of these things are going on in different districts. They're the ones that are putting their districts on blast. They're the ones that are, there's a student newspaper in Wisconsin. I have trouble remembering which one it was, which city, Wisconsin City, because they're next to us and we don't try to know too much about Wisconsin. But there's a
it's
city
like
where
in Jersey, right?
is probably the exact same thing, except for I don't know if y'all have this in New York and in Jersey. You will have people on the Minnesota side of the fence who root for the Packers. And I'm like calling for a law to like kick them out.
To kick them out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, on the other side of the lot.
Yeah, you got people do that. People that makes sense, though.
It's down in South Jersey that rock with the Eagles.
Well, that's correct. Nice. I mean, because technically we should annex Jersey and make those beaches ours. Listen, but, you know.
Anyways, so there is a student newspaper in that state called Wisconsin where they discovered that their newly hired superintendent had the wrong credentials, that the credentials for the superintendent was a lie. And the district hadn't found it out. The school board hadn't found it out. Nobody found it out. It was the young people.
You're starting to see that a few times now, like with superintendent.
No credentials.
The George Santos of superintendents. But it's young people and they got the energy. Now, let me raise something to you Philly people. Because actually, Sharif, the night I met you, actually it was the next day. Y'all had something going on in Philly. Y'all had a strike, a teacher strike at that time.
It wasn't a strike. It was a John that we just didn't go to work. It was a call out type thing. I was a teacher, part of that at that time.
You were part of that. That's legal.
They had to drop me away. They had to drop me off blocks away from it.
You just admitted on air that you were breaking the law. If I heard you correctly,
I'm not. Confirm
anyways,
you're not confirming or denying.
So don't be a snitch, bro. So Felon's on the show.
You know how Rakim said the R on here when we talk about the R? Watch it. You know what I'm saying? Watch it.
You just called me Charleston White.
So anyways, the thing I'm trying to say delicately, because I you know, y'all from Philly, and I don't know how to put this. But you had a group of young people.
Bro, we from Philly. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Put it delicately.
All right. Well, first of all, your mascot is a psycho. That's the craziest looking damn thing I've ever seen.
Hold up,
that's
Chris.
Like the craziest looking goddamn Muppet I've ever seen in my life.
Flyer Joy?
Yeah. What the hell is that thing? It's like something out of a bad dream. Anyways, I'm going to finish my point, which is basically to say y'all had a youth union, a student union that seemed to be super kind of like aware of the teachers union's talking points almost verbatim. Mm. And it made me wonder a little bit because I saw the Youth Congress and they sounded different. And they were from all different kinds of schools and from all throughout the city. Your mayor at the time had a Youth Congress, young people. Jamira Burley, if I remember right, was the person who led it at the time. And it was kids.
Jamira.
It was across different kinds of schools. But the student union sounded just like the teachers union. And it made me wonder how sometimes we'd be using young people
Chicago all the time.
Do they do this in Chicago also? Yeah.
What?
Yeah, sometimes we'd be using the young people like in ways that's very kind of suspicious.
Chris, you know how you introduced the show? You should have introduced the show with the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. That's what you.
Anytime if you think Random Ray is missing,
he just shows up. Remember, he just shows up.
Sesame Street, that Grover, when he would become a superhero, he would just fly in and just land anywhere. Like that's whatever that was. That's Ray. That's Super Grover. Just show up.
Listen, man, I do got to keep it a beam with this because I've worked along with some of the Philly student union folks that you're talking about. And I think it had, you know, less to do with manipulation and more that they were aware of what teachers were talking about, because not only was it their teachers in their classrooms that they were working with, but they would also come out and teachers would support the work that they were doing around kind of incarceration and over-policing in schools. So it was more of a mutual kind of thing, but I definitely would be the first to admit that there is manipulation of youth, and it was probably with the mayor's commission too, right? And I'm a huge advocate, and I was even telling my students when I was teaching back then to even question me, to question the folks that you work with, right? And I think that sometimes we do a disservice when we try to say, and again, I'm going back to this, what the students actually want, right? What they actually need. And adults kind of run roughshod over the reality of what a lot of majority of students, quite frankly, want, because majority of students aren't involved in these movements, right? It's usually just a small cadre of folk who are actually really involved in the conversation. So like when we talk about what happened in Philadelphia specifically, especially around the Philly Student Union, you know, I taught some of those children. I taught some of the children from Youth United for Change, right? And these students were passionate, social justice oriented folks. Now, there has been examples of students in Philadelphia, and I used to challenge them, who have been manipulated to co-sign certain type of talking points and ideology, which is problematic. But again, that also happens with the establishment and the mayor's commission of students and the kind of pigeonholing and using students as props for kind of political advantage, right? And props, which is just like a tragedy and folks ain't honest about it. And I'm glad that we're bringing this up, because the reality then becomes is like, how do we even know how students actually move? Because last time I checked, John Lewis and them, they always talk about how their teachers influenced them to basically lead the modern day civil rights movement, right? So Tima Clark is very clear in the sense of what she was teaching her students, but also being very intellectually honest about what they're presenting, and also being very critical of even their presentation of what they're having their students engage in.
So yeah, it's,
I mean, that's...
Would you say there's a pink wall in teaching? You know how there's a blue wall in policing, to where like, you know, there's this silence in terms of like when a dirty cop does something bad or doing something wrong, and then other cops won't turn over on them because, you know, they're part of this.
No snitching.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like the same thing exists in teaching? In terms
Come on,
of,
you know the answer to that.
No, he just popped out to breaking the law. I want to see if he gonna.
No, I totally co-sign that. And those teachers are usually trash, right? Those are the teachers involved in kind of indoctrinating students based on their own ideological orientation, regardless whether it's right, left, in between, or whatever titles that we want to give their political orientation. But the reality then also is that there are teachers, right, who are kind of advocating for social justice in their classroom, and that students tend to cling to kind of what they're learning to and want to see it in the real world. And the best teachers create the circumstances for those students to practice that theory in the real world, right? And I think that you see that a lot, but also you also see folks manipulating and using these students as props for their own political kind of angle. And I mean, it's an ugly reality across the board, but don't get it twisted. Most of those folks that you're talking about, the pink shield or whatever you refer to, I like that. Those people hated people like me as teachers, because then also I would call those folks out and be like, you ain't really about what the students need, and you're not really about what needs to happen in a larger society. You just want to be important, right? You just really want to push your political agenda. And that's a sad reality that exists on all sides, man. Not just the left, but also the right, right? We see that in Florida right now with DeSantis, with those Haitian immigrant children holding the things about anti-CRT, man. They become props.
There's always one in the crowd. Like, there's always, it's the biggest pick me season ever too. Like you can always pick one out. There's always going to be one. It's the one who, you know, the girls didn't like and didn't have a date to prom, and he's mad at black people for the rest of his life or whatnot. That's the one holding the sign. He shows up. Reef, he's standing in the back there. You know, the biggest pick me's ever. And I'm so sick of them, to be very honest with you. They're behind the sandwich. They're behind Youngkin. They're behind whatever. You know, Youngkin got a whole lieutenant governor pick me who's been in the United States for 5 minutes and already hates black people. Right. Like, so, and that's who they find. That's who they find for their side. But let me say,
his visa application, probably.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Are you going to hate niggas? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, come on in. Brief. Right. Like, so, but anyways, like, you know, come on in. We like you. So you said something though that I find like interesting ish when you just said all that. Like, yeah, of course, the teachers work directly with the students. They form an understanding. This is where it becomes a problem for me. When you see like those student unions and they come, they disrupt school board meetings and they come and they sit and they're speaking specifically about charter schools and charter people and going after the board specifically at specific board members, in your case, a council or whatever y'all had at the time for charter schools or whatnot. And there's no charter students among them. And it's their teachers that they're working with. And their teachers have a vested interest, a vested financial interest in there being no competition to the system that pays them a pension. That is when it starts to feel like, yeah, you're having lots of social justice conversations with your students in your district classroom. But if the net result is them erasing young people in other classrooms that don't pay you a pension, now you are indoctrinating. Because your students don't sound like they know anything about like a variety of opinions and students and the way that students exist. They sound like they're just fighting for one thing. And it just so happens it's the one thing that the employees of the system that they're in actually want them to be for. That's what I noticed and recognized in some of the talking points. I thought it was odd that they were just speaking so much about that. I just thought it was odd that they were talking about kids in another school, in another place, that weren't them, without those kids being present and represented to say, well, wait a second now. Like, we can agree that there's a lot of messed up stuff in this world, but now you're coming from my school and my situation without me here, right? Which is another form of erasure. I will also say this, the last thing I'll say, because Sharif has heard me say this a million times over the years, that is the first school board meeting I've ever been anywhere where adult teachers shouted down young people who said the wrong thing when they got their turn to speak at the mic, and shouted down elders, where white teachers in t-shirts that looked alike shouted down black elders and black students who said something that went the wrong direction for them. And I told the person who was sitting from the district with me, y'all let people do this here? Because I could say, of all the backward stuff I might be able to say about the Twin Cities, you are not going to shout down our elders or our young people in a meeting as white teachers in a meeting. I don't know how that happens, to be very honest with you. Reason, I said a lot there. I just kept going. And I feel like I'm beating up on Philly, but there's two of y'all and there's two against one. So, you know.
Listen, I actually remember stepping, and I've shared this story before. Like, I had to step to a young white lady. She wasn't 19, but I called her 19. You know what I mean? But she was yelling at this black grandma about what she didn't know about her kid, her grandkid. And, you know, and I checked her, and you know what she did, you know, I can't really say to her credit because she was so disrespectful. So later on, she didn't apologize to the woman, but I saw her at another meeting, and she did put herself out there and say, look, I was wrong the other day. I was, you know, being disrespectful to, you know, to an elder. And I think some of this is black folks' fault in Philly and probably other places if it happens, because black folks will badge a white person using rhetoric pretty quickly, where they are like, oh yeah, they're leading the movement now. Like, oh, they are the voice. And I think sometimes that badge of like, yeah, you're a social justice warrior and you're with us. And they're really not, you know, because they have no place, no standing to have been talking to this elder the way that I saw her talking. And it's probably very similar to what you saw, you know, when you were at the, and the place I saw was in the school board meeting as well, Chris. I mean, so it was the, probably, you know, I wonder if it's the same person, but but it probably not, because she wasn't the only one. And I can tell you that the, you know, one of the times we had our charter renewal at Shoemaker, you know, we brought students with us, and you know, we knew we were going to get, you know, what they call it, like approved or whatever, you know what I mean? Like that. I mean, we were killing it, but we brought students anyway.
Talk your trash, Reef.
And show up, and there's a, unbeknownst to us at the time we get there, there's a rally outside to basically tell them to deny all of the you know, the charters that were up for renewal. And I'm laughing because, you know, our kids are like, who the hell are they talking about? I'm like, they talking about your school. Three of the loudest voices out, well, it was four. One was the head of the NAACP here in Philly. You know, he was out there the kids ended up shutting him down, but three of the other four loudest voices, a couple of them were actually in the Philly's rubber room.
For the lay folks,
these are folks who were removed from the classroom because they were that day. Now imagine, you know, it's a continuum of danger. If you're a little bit dangerous to black kids' minds, you're okay. You're still gonna be in front of them every single day. Then if you get egregiously dangerous, then they'll say, oh, you know what? Legally, we gotta remove you. We can't fire you, but we're gonna put you in the room and still pay you your full salary, but we're just gonna have you in the room in the district, and you're going to read a paper. So in New York, they did a big story a long time ago about the millions of dollars that was going out, and it's called the rubber room, right? You know, and we had that in Philly too. You know, they came out of the rubber room just to come out there for this rally, and they were the loudest one. One, I'm going to tell you, I was about to punch him in the mouth because he was disrespectful to one of my kids. Yeah, it was like that because, you know, one of the seventh graders was dancing, you know what I mean? Because it was like chanting and the kid was dancing. This old man comes up in his face and was like, oh, that's all they teach you, huh? And I was like, yo, don't talk to him. Don't talk to him. So he said something else slick to the kid. And I was like, listen, if you don't step off, I'm gonna punch you in the mouth. Like I told him, like, you're not gonna disrespect my student.
Oh, wait, what?
Yeah, no. I was a sitting principal, and I told the rubber room boy that I would punch him in the mouth because you're not gonna accost my seventh grade student. Like, nah, like, absolutely not.
Chris, you don't see what's happening here? Me and you are the two. We the two only law-abiding citizens on this podcast.
I didn't do it. I gave a fair warning. He did back off. You know, but it was like, you know, like you have no business. Like you are dangerous to students. You have no business even being out here. And I also had to check the head of the NAACP. You know, because he was out there running his mouth about stuff he had no idea. I was like, have you ever visited our school? He's like, no. Now, again, he did check himself and later the next week, he said, can I come visit your school? And I was like, absolutely. Anytime. Okay. Come on through. And he did come. He did come through because the students challenged him to do that. And he did come through.
Wasn't Carol Burris supposed to come visit your school?
She was. And then Carol Burris was like, you are the nastiest human being I ever met. You know, I'm like, because I'm defending black kids. Now I'm a nasty human being. You and Diane Ravitch can go sit somewhere. You know what I'm saying?
Like, hey, so I got, listen, here's a question I got for y'all, right?
So I got a lot of racist folks who didn't like my school. You know what I'm saying?
Bro, listen, they come out of the woodworks. What about this etiquette on Twitter, right? Because we'll see somebody like Amama Sarah, right? Who is doing whatever she's got to do in order to make Memphis work and make the best for North Memphis, right? And she'll straight up tell you, come find me. I'm in North Memphis. This is where I'm at, right?
They ain't going down there.
Absolutely not. They don't want none of that smoke. Bro, if somebody give you money for you to help benefit your community and for you to benefit black kids, are you going to turn it down?
I think we should tell people what we're talking about. So Sarah Carpenter, who we call Mama Sarah or Miss Sarah, is a grandmother 13 who organizes people of color, specifically black folks in Memphis, to fight for their rights in education, one of the poorest zip codes in the United States, not just within Tennessee. And she routinely will put stuff online on Twitter, and she's not a big Twitter warrior. She just put somebody out there because she's regular folk. She's just like regular people. She ain't out here playing the kind of academic games that people play on Twitter. So she, lo and behold, gets people showing up in her Twitter feed with the, well, who pays you? You're just saying that because blah, 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 whatever. Now, this is a person with more lived experience in her toenail than most of these people have in their entire lifestyles and their entire college-educated, middle-class, twittering asses will ever have, and yet they will still come for her. And today was one of those days, you know, where it happened again, and person went and pulled her 990s and said, oh, you know, you're being funded by the billionaires and all that type of stuff, and put it out there. It's a sister from St. Louis who did that. Now you have in cities like Philadelphia, Chicago, St. Louis, Seattle, these different places, this group of black folks who also will show up, and they look and sound every bit of white progressive. That there is a white progressive. They are the whitest of white progressives. They are from the mountains of Caucasus. they will do all of the things that the white progressives will do. And the funny thing about it is they will go after one of their own like her and erase all of her lived experience with that, you know, billionaire BS, right? Like she herself is a billionaire. First of all, I've been in nonprofit world for 25 years. I've worked in various nonprofits doing various things, providing direct services to families, providing food, meals, jobs, housing, job assistance. I can tell you a number of things on my resume that I've done, and we were all grant funded either from the government or from foundations in doing all of that work. In all of those years of doing direct service to people, I did not once see any of these people that are critics on Twitter show up to serve a meal, to help somebody move in the middle of the night, to get a woman into a domestic abuse shelter. I didn't see any of them there. All the ones who like to discount our work and talk about nonprofit work ain't like a real sector that's keeping half of America alive and shit. I didn't see any of them, but they'll go after people like her. So anyways, Ray, I didn't mean to steal your thunder.
No.
But I wanted to give people the backstory.
Yeah.
Of what this work is like.
I think it's important that you laid the foundation. Reef, what are your thoughts, man? Somebody come give you some bread in order for you to do better for black folks. What you gonna do?
I mean, listen, generally I'm gonna accept it. Like we have, you know, in the past, like, you know, there are a couple folks that we won't accept money from, you know, and I think everybody has to make that decision of where they are. But I think many of the folks who are just constantly talking trash, you know, they love talking. I mean, most, and I think generally that's a human condition. Most people are about that talk. You know, they're not like Migos and, you know, walk it like they talk it. They talk it like they talk it. They just constantly reinforce. Yeah, when's the last time I quoted Migos? But, you know, they're just like consistently. And, you know, anytime if you just ask them, what's your body of work? They'll go silent because they've usually accomplished nothing. There was a boy who's like, you know, in one of the most, you know, beleaguered, you know, with students who are the most beleaguered, aggrieved because of how they've been educated.
Yeah.
And when I asked the boy, like, so what's your vision now that you have in this, he's a talker. Yep. And he's in now this position of power. I said, all right, so what are you going to do now that you have this platform, this position, this power? He said, I'm going to build playgrounds. And I'm like,
a hoop.
Yeah, I'm like, playgrounds are good. I'm all about kids having recess and fun. But literally, that's it. Like with all, you know, the students and what they're grieved about. And playgrounds was his grand answer. But he's a yapper. You know what I mean? Like, he's a yapper. And he thought, like, that was co-signed by the Diane Ravages and the Carol Burrises and stuff. Yep. But no accountability for, like, can this kid read as he's playing on the playground? You know? And nothing about that, right? And so I think there's a lot of folks who, you know, I mean, you know, for them, what do they tweet? Like, oh, Sarah, Mama Sarah got Mackenzie Scott money. So what? So what?
I wish! I wish she
gave out like how many, like, you know what I mean? But to center and push, and these are the same people who'll be talking about protect black women. Yeah, you're going to single this, you know what I mean? Like this, and as you said, like a person who is just constantly working on behalf of her community.
Yep.
But you want to bash her because she accepted something. And what is she doing? She's building a community center. And that, like, that's your revolutionary act. That's what you want to tweet out.
Like, no, girl, that's your allyship. Right.
Yeah, I'm just
I think we should just show her too, because here it is. Dr. Laura Preston, all these orgs are funded by white venture capitalists who live on the coast and don't give a shit about our kids' struggle learning to read. Some of us are in the fight, skin in the game, and don't get paid for advocating for our kids.
St. Louis.
Okay. Now she's saying this about the parent, the powerful parent movement, which is actually Mama Sarah's network of folks. Like I said, black folks, black moms and grandmoms experience all kinds of things in those zip codes that I just told you about, including loss of life, the median income in the neighborhood where Mama Sarah's headquarters is I want to say $18,000 a year is the median income in the neighborhood where their community center is. So you have Dr. Laura Preston saying all these orgs, these white venture classes, blah, 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 are struggling. Some of us don't get paid for our kids. Now, first of all, define our, like my kids aren't your kids, Dr. Preston. We got I know we have two different lifestyles because your name is Doctor. I know I came from a different place for sure. No, I'm going to do that because it's some middle-class bullshit. So I'm going to do it. And then, you know, all this revolutionary talk, don't give a shit about our kids, blah, blah, skin in the game. Well, honey, let's compare skins.
Who has more skin in the game? Who has more skin in the game than Sarah Carver?
Let's just talk about what the skins look like.
Some black person badged her to think that she freaking outranks Mama Sarah.
That's it.
That's the problem. Some Negro badged her because the other person that was tweeting from St. Louis was a black woman.
That's right.
And so it's people like her who will badge, you know, Lulu from St. Lou, to even think, to fix her lips, to say something. You shouldn't even be talking about Mama Sarah. Right. You should be sitting at her freaking seat, at her feet, and trying to learn from her. Exactly. Understand. Like, that's the kind of stuff that really just pisses me off. Like, shut up. Like, too many people are talking. Like, you have no right, no business, no, that. That's the kind of stuff that ends up, and these are the same type of people who are leading classrooms. Yeah. They're making policy. Yeah. They're exerting power over people. But there was also someone from our village who opened the door.
And I just want to say for the record, because, you know, since you said it, receipts. Yes, there is a Negro that badged her. Gloria Nolan is the one who started it all out, and she's a person in St. Louis.
That's what I was talking about.
What does she do? What does she do? What does she do? Is she in the classroom? What does she do?
I asked her that.
She repeats Carol Burris talking points and gets accolades for doing it, because this is what Black people do in education.
And from Raggedy Diane Ravitch.
That's right. This is what you do in any city in the country where you want to get a nice headshot and ascend. They will say it's billionaires. It's not really billionaires. It's just get with the Ravitch train in any city and get in the union system and get all the accolades for being the one who's going to point out, oh, those aren't real parents over there. See, this is the problem that I have. And Ish, I'll let you jump in here, because I'm just going to say what my problem with this thing is. I don't care what your hustle is. Like, I don't care what your thing is. Don't use me to knock other Black people out of what they want. Don't use Black public school students to go after Black charter school students. Don't use a Candace Owens on the union side to be the one to say that Mama Sarah doesn't deserve to be heard, right? Yep. This is the problem. You can advocate against anything in the world, injustice and anything you want to advocate against. Don't use me as a union or as a district or as a charter lobby or as anybody to be your Candace Owens.
Yep.
To go after my own people and say, yeah, but them Negroes over there, they shouldn't be heard. We should, they're suspicious. We shouldn't even be talking to them. So many people in our comments right now have suffered this exact same thing. So many people in the game, people leading schools, great schools, people who have started programs, who have been funded in one way or another, all have experienced this erasure, this sense of, I'll have to listen to you. You got money from Walton. Really? So did the NAACP, but you don't seem to have a problem with that. So did all the HBCUs, but you don't seem to have a problem with that.
They weren't going to say shit about HBCUs. They weren't going to do it, because them alum would have came and handed them their ass.
They're not going to say anything about any of the nonprofits that are on their side of the fence pushing the union gospel, who are also getting checks and getting paid.
So because here's my question to you, right? So, like, we're pretty open to dialogue about most things. So if you come to me, you come at me on Twitter or whatever, and you say something fly or something fresh and whatnot, and I'll be open to dialogue with you about, I'll learn you some things, right? But, like, when you try to show out in front of them people, that's when I start having a problem. The reef, like, you know how you just got upset with, like, folks and how folks talk to their elders and the elders in our community? I feel the same way as you feel, but I also feel like there's certain conversations that I want to be had behind closed doors. You don't need to air that shit out for these people to come in and then chime in, right? Because, like, a conversation like that, and then you get a subtweet from Diane Ravitch, like, woman, don't tweet our mama, like, don't tweet our elders, right? Like,
need to have a rule, period, amongst all of us, all Black people. We need to have a meeting next Tuesday, all Black people. Sit down and say, listen, all Black people, this is just what I'm saying. No matter what, you don't get on a microphone and get used by any organization specifically for the purpose to take your own people out who disagree with you.
Facts.
Right? Like, I'm for all of it. If you want to start a charter school, a private school, a district school, I will protect the Sonia Santelius in Baltimore, who is running a traditional district.
Yep.
I will protect her against people who come for her. I will protect my Black teachers who have people coming for them. I will protect district schools for the people that want to destroy them, right? And charter schools from the people that want to destroy them, and magnet schools. I don't have any group you can use me against of other Black people, except for the Candace Owens of the world, who only have one job. You got one job, and your one job is to make white people feel good.
Even in saying that, and here's, I want to give you your props, Chris, because even in saying that, we'll protect whoever.
Well, let me get this brother full screen in. If you want to say something that's going to agree with me, go ahead,
bro. Yeah. even in our conversation about protection for our people, right, it still doesn't remove them from being critiqued. And so, like, if we still want to have a hard conversation about the work that somebody's doing, we'll still have those conversations. But it's out of love, and it's out of solutions. And so one of the things that you did when it came down to this whole, like, everything that's happening in Baltimore, like, yo, you made it real, and you were like, I'm the problem. And it shifted the focus from the focus being on just the test scores, and it put the focus on the adults, right? And I've never really seen that done in comms. I've never seen anyone, like, take accountability then for others to take accountability. So I just want to give you your props on that. That was dope.
I appreciate it. I told people I'm responsible for the young people in Baltimore not learning math. Can't blame the schools and teachers and everybody else. It's adults. It's all of us together. If our kids aren't reading, we can't say it's because of the schools. that. So anyways, Ish, jump in, bro.
I'm sorry, because I've been meaning to. Number one, I got to point out the fact that before me and Sharif even met, folks was telling me not to mess with him. And that my role within the teachers union, which I was, I still am a huge advocate of a teacher union. So I just need to preface it with that. The folks started talking smack on me because of my relationship with Sharif. Even dude, I think Sharif is talking about in the rubber room, a picture of me and my wife dressed up as Black Panthers during Halloween to discredit me to other teachers.
What? Right? That will give you more credit.
Yeah, and I even met folks, teachers in the northeast of Philly, right, which is like the Long Island if you're in New York, right?
Don't do that to us. Yeah. And they both wanted to secede from their states. They're the exact same bulls.
And they straight up said to me, oh, we thought you were the scariest thing in the world, right? We thought that you hated white people, all da da da. And, you know, right then, for me, if I peep game immediately, right, that these folks aren't really for the interest of our children, the folks who were telling me not to mess with Sharif, the people that told me that I was wrong for like working and even being on a board of a charter school that my children go to, these same people had their children in charter school, if not even living in the city. And then I peep game. I'm like, yo, this ain't my fight. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it becomes like I'm for teacher unions. But teacher unions used in a way that protects you from teaching the truth, right? From really going out your way for the benefit of the children in front of you. Instead, folks use that to leave meetings as soon as the bell rings, right? And I noticed that. So, like, we also need to be honest about there is corporate influence.
Ours!
That don't pay, you know, that are used. Right now, we can see white parents, you know, I don't even know what they call no left turn and all these other things, millions of dollars of parent groups that come out of nowhere. Like that's also funded.
Who said no left turn? What is that? Like the mommy group.
Yeah. The mommy group out and it started in the suburbs outside of Philly. So when I'm saying all this is like all these factors are operating at the same time. And then black folks, the one thing that folks need to remember, and I said this the last time we were talking, John Henry Clark, you have no friends. If you want to know who your friend is, look in the mirror. Freaking the governor of New Jersey right now is doubling down on AP African-American studies. He's saying, well, we're going to do it more because Florida is not doing it. You're using black people as a political pawn for your own political interest.
Hey, I'll take that. That's still a win.
I mean, whatever we can use to get and gain,
Chris,
right?
You on mute.
All about that.
It's not a win. It's part of it might be part of a tactic. It ain't a win.
No, It's a tactic to advance to the win.
That's a win.
And that's why I'm not mad at folks that would use union power for the benefit of black children. I ain't mad at people that would use corporate money and finances for the benefit of black children. It becomes a difficult thing where we have folks who just go along with it without thinking about what is actually happening within the classroom and for our children, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I see that happening on all sides, man. And so like when I hear people bash unions just outright, I'm like, yo, you're simplistic if anything, because you really don't understand that there are folks on the ground who are really fighting for the right thing that are using their union protection not to be fired, right? Because down in Florida, they don't got a union. So them teachers putting a Black Lives Matter flag or having the wrong book in a class are just getting fired right out right now. In Tennessee, fired right out right now. So like when we talk trash on unions, you also need to pay attention to the fact that many people who are in unions have been protected because they've been able to still seek the truth. And even though them people try to fire them, they were like, wait a minute, you can't do that without due process, right? But then at the same time, I do recognize there's people that use that and manipulate structures for their own political ideological benefit that is at the detriment of Black children, right? But that happens in union situations, non-union situations. I mean, like, we're not in a good situation.
Hey, you see, Chris, it's just made my point, right? The way he just came for these unions, you would think that the union was 85% Black men.
And I'll tell you this much, in Minnesota, Black male teachers are 0.05. in the state. The
whole I think I know those two brothers too. Yeah,
you probably and y'all probably know state. Both of yeah, them. Yeah. You know, I'll say this about the union thing. Now that I'm a member again of a union, you know,
been renewed.
Member, yeah, I've been a member more than once though in my lifetime of a union. This is what I'll say. It's kind of like the police union, right?
Ooh.
Which is when I hear people talk about education unions and they have a rosy picture of them, I think like the cop that is going to call the other black the other bad cops out needs protection.
Yep.
But I think he's outnumbered. I think he's outnumbered. The ones that will use it as protection, get their job back after they even beat a brother down, are probably more of what the union does in a lot of cases. But it's you want the union there for the ones that want to. But here's the thing, because this show is about youth and young people. There is no real young people's union. There's no authentic, unattached, unaffiliated young people's voicing system. And there's not like a superintendent that I have met. Like when I came to Philly that time and I met you, Sharif, and that was 14, 15. I don't know what year it was. It was years ago. I was amazed by the mayor's youth congress, because young people that I listened to, we had a full day of listening to them. And it was interesting to me because in the middle of it, I thought, you know what? This is interesting. I've never sat through a full day of just listening to young people on panels. I've sat through full days of listening to old people on panels and whole conferences as a job. Like I've had that, but I've never just had to listen to one panel after another of young people take on different things. And I feel like every adult in the audience had that feeling. Every adult in the field or in that room at some point was like, we should do this more. We should hear more of this. And this is what I believe about every change you want to make. Here's the, yeah, first of all, oh my God, really? You just discovered that. But here's the one thing I need to see happen when I know change is going to happen. You have to create a structure. You just can't say, well, we should hear from young people more or whatnot. If I was a superintendent, I'd create a structure of hearing from. I would create a structure of youth empowerment. Like some districts have a seat on the school board for a student, right? Well, that's a structural change. That's a change of which is going to go on after that student is gone, right? So what other structures could you create? And I know we're coming, you know, close to time, but I'll ask you all this. What structurally could superintendents, teachers, educators, anybody put in place to make sure that there is a structured way to make sure that there is a democratic outlet for young people's voice in education?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, similar to what you said, as far as school boards, I think in a lot of places, the school board students may not have voting rights. You know, they're there, you know, mm-hmm. they can weigh mm-hmm. in, you know, but I can't imagine where there's nothing that they can, you know, shouldn't be able to vote on, you know. But I'm also thinking like that shouldn't just be for the school board. That should be for each kind of body should have that. I know our, you know, superintendent has a superintendent cabinet, you know, but should that just be the superintendent? Should that be other folks, you know, who constantly have a cabinet where they are, you know, weighing in and sharing, you know, because at the end of the day, it's their experience with our leadership that's going to make a difference, you know, good or bad, their experience with our leadership. And if we're so far away that we can't hear directly from them about their experience, you know, to me, that's the most important feedback that you can get is how are students and elderly experiencing the services in the city, right? You know, who are the most marginalized and how would they talk about, you know, your experience? You know, there's a story about this, this man, he was a leader of a country. And one day he was just walking and he saw this woman who, you know, was struggling. And so he was helping her and everything. And she was bad mouthing the leader of this country. And she didn't realize it was him. You know, he was just out helping and, you know, just kind of walked around. And she was bad mouthing. He started asking, well, like, tell me more. And she said, we had a war. I lost my husband. Now I have these my children, and we're forgotten about. Like we made the ultimate sacrifice. We lost our father and our husband, and you had no clue. And you know, he like that struck him in a way. And I just think about that story a lot, where it's just like if he wasn't just out in the community and, you know, like in disguise to try to understand it, would his handlers ever told the story about this woman and the thousands of others like her? right? And we can kind of give that same type of story. But I think some of these cats, they have such level of walls, human walls, between the people and them. And I don't think, I don't know how you lead in that fashion. I just don't, I don't see how, because that means you're trusting this, you know, this barrier. Like, and those barriers are there for a reason. It's to filter, it's to lie, it's to create, like, you don't hear from what the folks are, you know, are saying, what they're experiencing, and all that will make, you know, will make justice, you know, fleeting, because you won't get it. And so I think that level of human, you know, I think everybody should really study this idea of servant leadership. You know, I think everyone should think about Ella Baker, and that's, that should be like one of the models that's taught.
Let's just stop for a second. Everybody should do this, blah, blah, blah. All right, you got 30 seconds. Teach a lesson on servant leadership. What is it right now? Go, boom, you a teacher. Let's hear it.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, servant leadership is mean that I'm accountable for your actions, but I am not trying to produce followers. I'm trying to produce leaders. I'm supporting leaders. And your voice is actually the loudest, most informative part of the direction that we go. So if I'm a teacher and I'm a servant leadership, that means I'm accountable for your success. I'm not just, I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming him. I'm not blaming him. And your voice, I'm asking you, how are you experiencing my leadership? I'm telling you, this is, I'm not, most teachers, any teacher, you know, around the country, we can tell you what TSWBAT means. The student will be able to. When I'm a servant leader, I'm also saying, this is what I will be able to.
What? You didn't tell me a new acronym. I'm going to use the hell out of that.
This is what I will be able to.
How did you not know that?
I don't know.
Well, he hasn't led a classroom, but he's...
Maybe you know, I'm too stuck on slant. You know, like, maybe I'm just...
You're going in the wrong
slant. Sit up straight. Watch my face. Answer my questions.
One of the things that I'm doing, right, in terms of, like, activating student voice is we have an 11th grader or a couple of 11th graders that are doing a curriculum audit of our social studies lessons that are being taught third grade and sixth grade, and their number one task is to find out if it's culturally affirming to students of color, and if it's not, what kind of anticipatory materials should we bring in order to make it more culturally affirming to Black and Brown students. And so they're really into it. These are also students that want to become teachers once they graduate from college. And we're putting some programs in place in order for them to be able to do that. And we're also going to leverage REEF and the Center of Black Education Development in order for those kids to teach other kids so that they can start getting their beaks wet.
All right, y'all. Well, let's do a lightning round of final thoughts on student power in schools. Any last and final thoughts that you have? And we'll start with Ish, because Ish, you don't have to just make this your final thought, because I know you didn't get in there much tonight. So
it's all good. You know, I think I deviate from some of y'all experiences and all that from the angle of, you know, just being involved in the teachers union. But I definitely need to uplift the 1967 student walkout in Philadelphia, which eventually led to the Black History mandate here in Philadelphia in order to graduate. But also within that resolution language was the integration of African-American history for every single grade. A lot of folks leave that out when we talk about that resolution. But what those students demanded in 67 is still relevant to today. They had 100 demands. And a lot of those things are still should be fought for, right? I also want to uplift the fact of and the idea of not allowing the pressure gauge to be manipulated, right? And when I say the pressure gauge, I always get concerned when folks play lip service with student voice, and then student voice just becomes, oh, we listen to students, and then the same thing goes down, right? I'm a strong believer that none of this stuff will change internally from, you know, from students' perspective, and that there should be an inside and an outside game simultaneously, right? And our children, our students need to learn that, right? Not just in a textbook, not just from stories, but those larger experiences that allow them to check and practice their theory within the world, right? Stickman from Dead Prez has a verse. It's It's practice, theory, practice. Wisdom is organically grown. It's never prepackaged, right? And that what students are dealing with today is much different than in the past. But in the past, you can learn from the mistakes and the lessons and the missteps and all the good things that came about it in order to formulate something different today. But you actually have to practice that theory in real life. And that is not going to be achieved simply by talking to a superintendent or any of those other procedures, even though that is relevant and is still needed, especially if that person is authentically really listening to the students and taking their concerns under consideration. But the real change always happens when students take the power in their own hands and challenge the system and challenge just the way folks have operated. Because quite frankly, y'all, when we get old, man, we get kind of set in our ways with ours, right? And the students kind of dislodge that and be like, yeah, whatever you talking about, bro, but this situation is what we see on the ground. This is what we want to see happen that's different. And we're seeing that bubble up already right now and across the country where students are being told, you can't learn this. And students are like, I'm going to learn this anyway. And you telling me I can't learn it means that I should be learning it, right? And that healthy skepticism I started to see in my own classroom right before I left, right? It's a healthy skepticism that didn't exist even when I started teaching over a decade ago. So we're starting to see that kind of distrust of structures and systems and a realization that what we have in place is not working and that we should not double down on what already exists. If anything, we should double down in resisting it. And that youthful energy, that youthful resistance is not going to happen by being simply on a school board and having a non-vote, right? It's going to happen by those children outside demanding that we want to learn the truth. And I don't care what you tell me. I know what's true in my gut. Even though I don't know all the facts, I know you're lying to me. And that's what students have told me from my focus groups that I've sat with them. That's what my students told me in my own classroom. They know that when we lie to them, and they are listening, paying attention, and also formulating something new that we can't even imagine right now. And that's the only way I think real change happens, even if that change is not permanent. Unfortunately, too many times it's temporary, but that knowledge should still be taught to our students so they know that's a long fight. It's not going to be over just simply by getting something at the end of the day. Your children will also have to fight.
That's dope. Ray, what's up with you, sir?
So I'm ceding my time this week, and I'm ceding my time to you, Chris, because I want you to talk about the work that you're about to do with the NAACP and the National Charter Collaborative on Tuesday.
I appreciate that, bro. I'll go to Sharif. There might be one slight revision to what you just asked for. You trying to put me with a different organization?
It wasn't National Charter Collaborative.
No, it's the National Charter School Collaborative and the
Not NAACP. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, you're about to get me in trouble, right? You had the wrong Black Mafia come for me, right? So like you have to get the mafias right. But yes, thank you. I appreciate that, sir. I'll come right back to that. Sharif, final word.
Yeah, I want to, you know, also agree with, you know, with Ish. I do think there needs to be more organizing. And if those unions, I would just say the unions also need different, we need different unions. Just like you mentioned, you know, students, you know, there's parent unions, there's, you know, we have the National Parent Union. We have other, you know, organizing bodies. To me, that's the most important part. You know, whether it's called a union, whether it's called something else, you know, organize groups of people within. Because right now, in across America, 80% of public school teachers are white, which means 80% of the union body is going to be white, and not all of them have internalized what anti-racism means. That means any vote, if it's just done in aggregate, can be severely anti-Black. So, you know, I think it just, we got to make sure that there's a, you know, a counterweight to the anti-Blackness, the anti-immigrant, the anti-Indigenous, anti-Latino, anti, you know, like whatever that is, like there has to be a counterweight. And it may not necessarily always be within that same body of organization. And it should be, because it should be that resistance within, as well as, you know, on the outside of, you know, of independent groups. I think, you know, it makes me think of, you know, that organization being Black in Schools, you know, and what they're trying to do and you know, what they're uplifting. I think Kamika Royal is on their board, you know, but like being Black in Schools and what they're trying to advocate for, and supporting organizations like that and making sure, you know, like that they're being supported and that they start having chapters, you know, throughout, you know, like I think we all agree on, you know, we've spoken about this ad nauseum that, you know, the what was lost with the, you know, loss of the Color Teachers Association, right? Like folks who are specifically and significantly focused on the Black educator as well as the Black student experience. And loss of that means that voices starts to get marginalized and they ignored. And so we can look at even just, you know, I try to follow every time I come across one, you know, the at Black In, and then they'll have like a school. They have them for high schools. They have them for colleges, you know, Black In, where these young Black youth, it may just be a handful of them at some of these schools, but they're organized and they're talking about, here's how we're experiencing this leadership or rather lack of. Here's how we're experiencing education, or rather the miseducation. You know, this is what we're doing and what we're seeing. And often you'll see that the media won't cover that. Like, they're not covering that specific. To me, that is a story. You know, we have Philadelphians, Black students in these so-called elite schools. How are you elite when you got so much anti-Blackness, you know, seeped into your policies and in your practices? And the Black students are saying, here's my experience in the school. But it wasn't like a, to me, if we're centering youth, that's front page news. Here's where our students, the most marginalized, who they let a couple in, trickled into this space, and they're miserable, and they're being treated like second class citizens in these places. And these are all types of schools, private, you know, public, whatever. And so I would say, you know, something in there. And I love the fact, this idea of youth being defiant and rebellious in this space, and also like more informed and independent. You know, one of my favorite song, you know, Freedom School songs is Something Inside So Strong. And one of my favorite lines, I love the song altogether, just the messages.
Sing it, Reese.
Something inside so strong, so strong. You know that. Listen, I'll sing the rest of it later. But one of my favorite parts is where the youth say, like, you know, we're going to do it anyway. That's one of the lines. So everything you tell me I can't do, we're going to do it anyway. And to me, that's what we got to make sure that our children are internalizing, you know, like how to promote justice, and that they're going to do it anyway, even if folks detest it, that they're going to fight for justice, even and especially when people detest it.
Y'all didn't know that she was going to get Black Power karaoke this week, did y'all?
I'm going to do it anyway.
Y'all didn't know.
I'm going to do it anyway.
I just want to say, like, if you are Black and you are listening to this right now, and somebody who's a friend of yours, like Sharif or anybody else, Sharif didn't do me dirty like this, but I'm going to say that this is, I want you to be on the lookout for people like Sharif on this. The people who run these freedom schools, you know, and if you don't know enough about it before you go and you get invited to go, they don't tell you everything that you need to know. And what I'm about to tell you now might be quite shocking and stop you from actually wanting to participate, but I'm going to say it anyways, because it must be said. When you go there, first of all, if you're not a happy person, going to a freedom school morning at 7:30 in the morning or whatnot, it's not going to be your jam, because like it's just happiness everywhere, whatever, and dancing and stuff like that. And that's the other part. With your old ass, they will put you in the middle and make you dance. You know, whatever, and you didn't sign up for that.
Chris, just do the snake. Your old head just.
But I did one of these numbers. You know, like
you did the robot. You know, like
you know, and there's nobody needs that type of negativity in their life to have to dance in front of kids first thing in the morning. So I just want to tell all the people out there, I'm just gonna be honest with you. No one else on this show will be honest with you. Ask some questions before they invite you to Freedom School. Before you show up, ask, like, you know, make up an injury. Oh, you know, I got a bad hip. you know, if I come there, I can't be all happy and dancing and stuff. I might read a book, but I got a bad, you know, make something up, because these people will lie to you. They will, they'll omit facts that are important for you.
Well, come in and just read. Join the reading circle. So this way you ain't got to dance.
I have to tell you, one of my favorite things in life.
I'm going to plug in my computer.
Ever doing in my entire life, like when I was a school board member and I would get invited to schools to come and read to kids. That those were my best days, even when I didn't know that they were going to be my best days. And I've said this on the show before, I'll say it again. My best days were visiting kindergartens, and I came to love kindergarten. I remember saying to myself, if I'm ever going to be a teacher, I'm going to for sure be a kindergarten teacher, because I would be having bad days and I would have a school visit on my calendar and I would go and read, you know, of course, my favorite book, Very Hungry Caterpillar by Eric Carle, dynamic, awesome book. Go and read that. And a morning with kindergartners could make the whole week better, make the whole thing better, turn everything around for me. I'd had depression days. I had bad days, whatnot. And I'd look down at my calendar and say, oh, my God, I'm like, I got to go read today or whatever, something like that. As a school board member, best days ever was visiting kindergarten, first grade. So it starts getting a little more serious after that. But so I always said, you know, if I ever become a teacher, late life is going to be a kindergarten teacher. But, you know, that aside, I appreciate Ray yielding his time so that I could tell y'all about this event coming this week. This is the church announcements portion of the show tonight, which we should have done. We should have done earlier. The first church announcement, I should say, is to find a person within our network to support this week. Find somebody and attack them with your love this week. Find a Twitter person, find a person within your network. We have all these very smart, scholarly people who are spending their days thinking about how we do better things for our kids, who are rarely being loved on for their intellectual work and the heft that they're bringing to the field. Find one, follow them, stick with them, lift up their work, send them a DM and tell them, I love what you are doing and thank you for doing it for our children and on behalf of our people. And that is one way that we can spread the love this week. It's a demonstrative action. So please commit to doing it right now. I'd also like to say there is an event that's coming up on Tuesday, the 21st. It's the one that Ray pointed to at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Y'all get your time zones right, because sometimes we be showing up to things, you know, because we didn't get the EST or the CST or whatever. This is 1 p.m. Central time on Tuesday. There's going to be an excellent conversation with three HBCU graduates who now lead K-12 educational institutions. And what's really important about this is when I said earlier about creating structures and systems, we need to create structures and systems that create a safe harbor pipeline for Black children from birth all the way through college, from birth to career. And one way that we can do that is we have these institutions called HBCUs, which it's been their mission for years to be Black education kind of producers, to produce. And if you go and look up the number of Black doctors that come out of HBCUs, the number of Black pharmacists and the Black dentists and, you know, the Black people that know how to throw up all the gang signs from the frats. They all come out of HBCUs down there, right? Right. All raised people. I'm not going to imitate it again, because last time I did that, I had like, you know, I had a warning that I might sleep with the fishes if I do it again. This is a joint effort between the Charter Collaborative, which is run by Naomi Shelton, which is an organization that is for community charter schools that are rooted in community, run by people of color, in partnership with the UNCF, which is the largest Black educational institution, period, ever. And it's the largest Black civil rights organization, period, end of story. I'm only talking in terms of amount of funds raised that go directly to Black people to do Black things. So this is going to be very important. That concludes our church announcements for this week. We appreciate you all. As always, the 8 Black Hands are here for you. We will be here for you next week, which will be our 200th episode. So please come and celebrate with us that we have been talking mess for 200 weeks. Almost, I don't think we've ever had a week off. Have we had a week off?
No, we had a week off. We had a vacation just this past cycle.
He needed another vacation.
Damn, I need a vacation for my vacation then. Shit, I'm back listening to y'all again. I need another vacation anyways.
Over a million downloads, man. Hey, people, over a million downloads. People have touched this thing. Hey, shout out to everybody that wished me a happy birthday today. I'm appreciative.
Happy Born Day to Raider Republican. Yeah. We appreciate you, brother.
And listen, shout out. I mean, 200 episodes. And just to think, I tried to convince y'all we should just keep this a phone conversation, a four-way phone conversation on every week. You know what I mean? Shout out to y'all that, you know, folks with actual vision on how to, you know,
Sharif was like, why would we broadcast it?
Yeah, why would we do that? Why do y'all want to do that? Like, why
would you want to do
that? We're having a good time just talking, you know, debriefing on the phone. So, I mad love and respect for, you know, you all with a vision of how you always talk about expanding the tent. And yeah. I think this is the ultimate way of expanding the tent and deepening community and connections across the country.
Well, I love Ish being here. I love the fact that we all come from different intellectual points of view that are pushing the same direction. We want to get 8 million Black children fully educated and ready for the world that, not like ready for the world that sings Oh Sheila, by the way. So every time I say ready for the world, I feel like I got to clarify. When I say we got to get them ready for the world, I don't mean we got to get them Jerry curls. Yes. I mean that we
I had a conversation with somebody about Jerry. Chris, you had a Jerry curl.
Best Jerry curl. Okay. I didn't have eight.
There's no such thing as the best Jerry curl.
No, there is. No such thing. I had what the was best.
The yellow and the yellow bottle with the red writing.
The carefree curl.
Carefree curl.
Yeah, carefree curl. And there was a California curl.
Look at him. He's looking up, you know, all nostalgic.
I don't like it when people say you had a curl. I literally had, by all objective standards, the best Jerry curl ever known to man. So I'm just going to keep it at that. Just so y'all like to play with me. Y'all like to play around. It was the best. It was what they would call yanging Jerry curl.
Oh my gosh.
Because I went from virgin fro to a curl. And when you go from a virgin fro to a curl, you get a very nice
transition.
The best ever. I should have taken pictures. The Smithsonian would have had it in the Smithsonian. Who had I documented? Anyways, friends and family, thank you all for coming on another weekend with the 8 Black Hands. We appreciate you as always. If you like the show, please share it with others, share it with friends so that we can expand our reach. We appreciate you. We will see you again next week.